This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. President Biden signed an executive order last week, what he called a first step in addressing systemic problems in the criminal justice system. He ordered the Justice Department to stop using private prisons. Those systemic problems the president was talking about, problems that go well beyond the 2.3 million people currently in jails and prisons in the United States, is what Reuben Jonathan Miller, he's an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Chicago, it's what he talks about in his new book. It's called Halfway Home, Race, Punishment, and the Afterlife of Mass Incarceration. Professor Miller, welcome to the program, sir.
Glad to be here.
I want to start with the subtitle of this book, Race, Punishment, and the Afterlife of Mass Incarceration. I want you to tell me about that, and I want you to use your brother and how you lived this experience.
So we've focused a lot of attention on jails and prisons. And what I was interested in writing about and revealing is how mass incarceration has changed the nature of social life in our everyday relationships. So how it shows up in, for example, my relationship with my brother, who's been in and out of prison, how it shows up across the dinner table, how it shows up between a mother and her child, a grandmother and her grandson, who she's trying to help. And so this, for me, is the afterlife. It's the lingering effects of incarceration in places that we might not expect.
And one of the ways that shows up, you say in this book, is that people who are living in this afterlife of incarceration get by, and this is a great phrase, I love it, on an economy of favors.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. So beginning in about 1980, there were changes in liability law that made it so that landlords, employers, licensing officials, et cetera, could be sued if they rented an apartment to or hired somebody with a criminal record. And the way that they took on that change in law and policy is they evicted people with criminal records. Hmm. They refused to hire people with criminal records. In fact, one change in policy that started in 1996 made it so that if someone with a criminal record so much as visited, the person who owned the apartment could be put out for letting them visit. And so what this does is it makes it so it's impossible, nearly impossible, for somebody with a record to find sustainable employment or housing or many of the things that they need to get by to meet their basic human needs. And at the same time, it makes them the least desirable candidates to help. It makes them somebody who you don't want to help because you can be harmed if you help them. They have to convince you to do them the favor of hiring them for a job that they're suitable for, leasing them an apartment for which they're well qualified, because of the legal changes that we've enacted during the age of mass incarceration.
What do you make then of, just to get to the news of the, you know, of the new administration, what do you make of the Biden administration's orders on private prisons, which are, we should say, just a small part of the prison system in this country, and also some of the thoughts of new people in power about incarceration in this economy?
I think it's a positive step in the right direction in how we think about the problems that we face. But turning every private prison, moving people from a private prison to a public prison, doesn't reduce the number of people in prison. And it certainly doesn't address the problem of the 19.6 million people with felony records who live on the outside of American jails or prisons.
Which seems to me to suggest that you believe while there are legitimate policy and law questions that we need to address, there's a whole slice of this that's subjective and more hearts and minds than law and policy.
It's interesting. My dear friend, Ronald Simpson Bay, who's in the book, would always say, I tell people you have to change hearts and minds. And when he used to say that, I would roll my eyes. I'd say hearts and minds, it's a legal problem. This is a problem of the law. This right. So there are 45,000 laws, policies, and administrative sanctions that target people with criminal records. But he says this, that's important too. He says, but if you don't change hearts and minds, every time you get a new administration, you face the threat of them wiping away any progress that you've made with the stroke of a pen. Mm-hmm. So there also has to be a transformation in how we think about people who've caused us harm and the place that we think that they're supposed to take up in society after they've done their time. Mm-hmm. So this is absolutely a both and response to this problem.
So let me, on the way out here, get you back to where we started, which is your brother— The afterlife. And I'm sure you've given much thought over your life and certainly specific while writing this book about how he wound up there and you wound up where you are. But tell me the story, would you, of trying to find him housing after he got out of prison?
Yeah, you know, it's striking. So one of the mandates is that you must have a place to parole to report to if you're to be released on probation, which is early release from jail or prison. And so I had to find some place for him to be. Now, I lived in faculty housing. Now, I've done quite a bit in my own life to force my way into the middle class, you know, did the education route, you know, served in the military, you know, did a bunch of things over my lifetime to ensure that my family was okay. But I was living in faculty housing. And so in faculty housing, you know, you can't have people with criminal records living in your home. Right. So it didn't matter that I was, you know, a professor at a pretty prestigious university, that I was myself middle class, that he couldn't stay with me or my family would be evicted. So we made a connection with a dear friend who said he would rent him his apartment. But the dear friend ended up renting that apartment to someone else.
Oh, man.
and so
maybe not such a dear friend, but anyway, go on.
These are all real questions. Yeah. And so we're scrambling to find him a place to stay. And so we eventually land on him staying in the apartment with the dear friend.
Oh, man.
And so the probation officer comes out to inspect the apartment, and I get a text message from him telling me that the probation placement has failed because my dear friend had two dogs.
Wow.
And people with felony records can't live in places that have large dogs. So this was the struggle.
Yeah. And out of that and a bunch more, I imagine, comes a book called Halfway Home by Reuben Jonathan Miller.
That's right.
He's at the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The book, one more time, Halfway Home, Race, Punishment, and the Afterlife of Mass Incarceration. Professor Miller, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Kai, thanks so much for having me.